It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Politics Wednesday has arrived. We're glad to have in our Cedar Falls studio Donna Hoffman, associate professor at the University of Northern Iowa. Hello, Donna.
Hi, Ben.
In Ames, our studio there, Stefan Schmidt, professor of political science at Iowa State University. Always good to have you as well, Stefan. Thanks for coming in.
Ben and Donna, hello.
Greetings.
Hi.
Okay, another week passes and another candidate declares. We want to devote a significant part of this program to sizing up Rand Paul as a candidate. Yesterday, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul made it official. He is running for president. And we were...
The Washington machine that gobbles up our freedoms and invades every nook and cranny of our lives must be stopped. Less than 5 years ago, I stood just down the road in my hometown in Bowling Green and said those same words. I wasn't supposed to win. No one thought I would. Some people ask me, then why are you running? The answer is the same now as it was then. I have a vision for America. I want to be part of a return to prosperity, a true economic boom that lifts all Americans, a return to a government restrained by the Constitution, a return to privacy, opportunity, liberty. Too often, when Republicans have won, we've squandered our victory by becoming part of the Washington machine. That's not who I am.
Okay, Donna Hoffman, how would you size up the Paul candidacy?
I think it's going to be one of the more interesting ones because he is going to try to appeal to a whole host of various groups that don't always come together very well. And so it'll be really challenging, I think, for him and his campaign to try to get all those groups to mesh together.
Tell us about those groups.
Well, you know, he's counting on, especially in Iowa, a lot of support from that holdover from his father, Ron Paul, who, of course, ran in 2012 and did decently well in the state, sparked this liberty movement in the state as well that briefly even kind of took over the Republican Party in the state. And so he's counting on those people to continue to support him and also to give him a good organizational base in the state as well. But he's also been appealing to young people who that overlaps with libertarians in a lot of ways. When he ran for Senate in Kentucky, he was seen as being the Tea Party candidate. There's competition for those voters in the state, of course, from Cruz and from Walker. He has also been appealing to African-Americans as well. And he's for the last year or so, he's been going around to historically black colleges and appealing to constituencies, especially minority constituencies that the Republicans don't usually often even attempt to appeal to. And so if he can get those groups to mesh together and come coalesce behind him, I think it'll be quite interesting. And it'll just be interesting to see the approach that he uses to try to get those people to all pull together.
His appeal to young people evident in a Friday visit. This coming Friday, he'll be on the University of Iowa campus in Iowa City. I believe that's already the second visit he's had just to that campus. We want to reach out to our listeners this hour. How do you size up Rand Paul as a presidential candidate? Interested especially in Republican voters, or perhaps you're a non-party or independent voter. Is he your candidate? Do his stance on the issues appeal to you? Tell us about that. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook. Or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Rand Paul, an eye surgeon and now Kentucky senator. What do you see as the biggest challenges facing Rand Paul, Stefan Schmidt?
Well, I think the Republican Party tends to be aggressive and hawkish in foreign policy. And I think that his position that the United States just simply shouldn't get involved everywhere in the world, spend a lot of money, have dubious results, as we can see in Iraq and in that whole region where the United States has made an enormous military commitment. That's a little bit of a hard sell for a lot of traditional Republicans. And I think his more let's call it a permissive position on some issues. Libertarians tend to be more permissive on certain issues. May also, you know, have to be sort of nuanced a little bit in terms of the social issues. Young voters, in case you're interested, I can report to you, my class of, or I have about 150, 180 students this semester. They actually are interested in Rand Paul.
Why?
They've gone. He came here to Iowa State, and a whole bunch of them went and turned out. I think they like the message of freedom and the idea that the federal government is too intrusive. They like the idea that he's been an outspoken critic of the National Security Agency surveillance program and data mining. You know, they do a lot of, they're online all the time, including during almost the entire period of all of my classes. And sometimes it's even related to my classes. and they're able to multitask. I mean, some of the best students in my class are on Facebook and they're tweeting and they're doing other stuff and they get A's and they're totally engaged. I don't know how they do it. But they
college has changed.
Yes. Well, it has, and there are still instructors who prohibit students from having laptops or smartphones in their classes, which is kind of interesting. But they like that whole idea that that the federal government has become a sort of ominous force, and they, you know, they don't like to be surveilled. They don't like all the rules and regulations about behavior and so on anyway. And he seems to sort of connect with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A Facebook comment, please do to tell us, River to River listeners, how you size up Rand Paul as a presidential candidate. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook to leave your comment. Here's a Facebook comment from Iowa City. Rand isn't perfect, but he sure is a hell of a lot better than any of the neocons or Clintons pursuing office. Should be fun watching him push a liberty-minded agenda through the political machine. Thanks for that Facebook comment. We heard, Donna, in that clip we initially played of Senator Rand Paul take a jab at his own party, squandering victory by becoming part of the machine when the GOP does win an election. That's a departure, isn't it?
It kind of is. And if you watched actually the speech that he gave on his podium, he had the top line that he had on the placard that was on the podium said, defeat the Washington machine or something to that effect. And that was a theme in his speech as well. And, you know, he in that quote that you played, he talks about taking our country back. Well, the immediate question comes to mind, we'll take our country back from whom? And he goes on to basically explain that as one being special interest and this notion of the Washington machine. And it's not really clear exactly who that is other than people who go to Washington, some of whom are elected officials, obviously, and then just become part of Washington culture. So he wants to turn that on its head. And, you know, that's a theme for a lot of people who run for both Congress as well as the presidency. Send me to Washington because I can clean up the den of thieves, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so he does have kind of this interesting message in terms of, again, going back to the different groups that he wants to appeal to, trying to appeal to all those and not appealing to what we might think of as traditional establishment Republicans. And so he's trying to cobble together all of these various groups into a kind of an interesting coalition, and we'll see how far that takes him.
Join us as we're sizing up Rand Paul as a presidential candidate. He announced officially yesterday. Sarah is in Des Moines. She dialed 1-866-780-9100. Sarah, welcome to the program. Are you a Rand Paul backer at this point?
I don't know. I'm one of those undecided voters, and I'm not registered with any specific party, but I think I'm one of those that Rand Paul is probably, you know, aiming his campaign towards for my vote.
Mm-hmm. What appeals to you about his positions, his candidacy?
Well, I think when he comes to Iowa, especially, I think that because his father did so well in Iowa, he's going to try to liken himself in personality as much as possible, but still maintain the fact that he is Republican versus Libertarian. And I guess, I don't know, I'm interested to see how that plays out with the younger set of voters.
Okay, Sarah, thank you for your view from Des Moines, 1-866-780-9100. Tom is with us in Cedar Rapids. Your thoughts on Rand Paul, Tom?
Hi. I'm not a Republican. I'm a kind of a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. It surprised me during an interview that he was camping on Benghazi when they were talking to him, if it was him against Hillary Clinton. And he really didn't have any other issues that he brought up, that he just kept keep hitting her with Benghazi. And that that surprises me. I think that's an old issue. I don't think people, I think people are past that. And it was, I thought it was kind of a bad play on the Republicans' part to bring it up in the hearings again.
Okay.
And that, I guess that's really what I want to say.
Okay. Tom, thank you for your view from Cedar Rapids. So we see here, Stefan, that these candidates, whether they be Rand Paul or others, are already sort of campaigning against Hillary, the presumed nominee, if we can even say that before she's even declared.
She may run. You know, we all assume, including Democrats, that she's going to be running and will get the nomination. But Benghazi is just a catchword for the base of the party. It has, I think, very, very little traction in the general election. So you will never hear the word Benghazi again after we get to the actual general election by presidential contenders, because the rest of the voters in Iowa know what the situation is actually like in that part of the world. They know what Libya looks like. And the idea that the United States could have somehow saved the lives of the ambassador to Libya and the security people that were killed with him in Benghazi seems beyond naive, but just stupid, given what we're seeing now, where that area of the world is a hellhole, where even the American armed forces probably, if they went in there, would have to go in with massive, massive forces, because it is chaos and anarchy. So I think that Benghazi is going to peter out a little bit at the end of all this. And yeah, they may throw it at Hillary Clinton, but I think voters just don't want to hear that anymore. The base of the Republican Party does, so Rand Paul can throw that out. Mm-hmm. But Rand Paul also, you know, has been going into the lion's den. I mean, he's going to Iowa City, you know, he's going to socialist places like that. and he was at Berkeley talking to students and got a great reception. The students talked to him, they cheered him, they didn't throw eggs at him, which is sort of remarkable. I don't know if he's going to, you know, get a lot of the new voters that the traditional Republican candidates have largely been unable to mobilize. Certainly, I think it's a far stretch to think that blacks and Latinos are necessarily going to go for him. But he's trying. You know, he's one of the only ones who is actually trying very hard and saying the Republican Party needs to, you know, go to that constituency, to that new demographic.
The Onion had a little bit of fun, this satirical magazine, in Rand Paul's announcement. A couple of their key facts, they say, the Onion, the satirical magazine, says to know about Rand Paul: political vision supports bipartisanship between the Tea Party and GOP. And on campaign strategy, hoping college-aged white males come to comprise over half of the U.S. population. So a couple of things. And current campaign war chest, 10,000 bricks of gold bullion. The Onion having a bit of fun with that. How do you size up Rand Paul as a presidential candidate? 1-866-780-9100. Do you see yourself giving him your support in the Iowa caucuses, in the general election? What issues do you agree with him on? Which don't you see eye to eye on? 1-866-780-9100. Iowa Public Radio's on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. There's a whole host of issues that are distinctly different from those of other Republican presidential hopefuls. And Donna and Stefan, I want to ask you about his foreign policy in just a moment. Let's listen to Rand Paul talking about his vision for foreign policy and specifically involvement in the Middle East.
We must realize, though, that we do not project strength by borrowing money from China to send it to Pakistan. Let's quit building bridges in foreign countries and use that money to build some bridges here at home. It angers me to see mobs burning our flag and chanting death to America in countries that receive millions of dollars in our foreign aid. I say it must end. I say not one penny more to these haters of America.
All right. Donna Hoffman, how much daylight do you see between Rand Paul and Ron Paul? And Ron Paul, when he ran, a noted isolationist, I guess you could say.
Well, you know, what he was specifically referring to in that particular speech, though, was the foreign aid aspect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even on that, he's had to backtrack a little bit. So he has traditionally wanted to basically phase out all foreign aid. And, you know, for a long-term goal, he says he still has that goal. But when people started to question him on Israel, because Israel receives a very large chunk of our foreign aid, which I should point out, foreign aid, you know, is 1% of the federal budget. So it's not a huge amount. And getting rid of all foreign aid is not going to balance the federal budget. But nevertheless, this is something that gets, as we heard in that clip, the crowd riled up. And so he's had to then say, well, OK, you know, we can have aid for Israel. And so he's backtracked on that a bit. And there are some other ways in which he has become a little bit less non-interventionist, if I can say that, than his father as well, because his father is very staunch on that. And, you know, he has to do better than his father did in terms of appealing to voters. And as Stefan mentioned earlier in the show, the foreign aid piece of his appeal to Republican voters needs some work, and he recognized that, and he's moderated some of that a bit. And so he's really become a little more pragmatist. He's become what we think of in foreign policy circles as more realist in thinking, in that, you know, he maintains basically that we could intervene when it's in our national interest. But he then defines national interest fairly narrowly. Mm-hmm. And his father doesn't necessarily always even go that far. He's just kind of absolutist in terms of non-intervention. And so he's tried to moderate that somewhat. But even having done that, it's still going to be a stretch to a lot of traditional Republican voters.
Mm-hmm. Interesting facet there, too, on President Obama's outreach toward the Cuban government. Rand Paul has generally been supportive. He says the American economic embargo has not worked to topple the Castros. His quote there, let's overwhelm the Castro regime with iPhones, iPads, American cars, and American ingenuity, something that he wrote back in December. Your take on him and foreign policy, Stefan Schmidt?
Well, I think his foreign policy position, oddly enough, is probably the best position that the Republicans have for the general election. I mean, Americans, by and large, want relationships with Cuba to, you know, to be normalized. I mean, you have to be a complete fool not to see that after 50 years, the Castro brothers are still running Cuba, and the embargo and lack of diplomatic relations and so on clearly not only hasn't worked, but it has actually given Castro what he needs to blame the problems of Cuba on the Americans. And so, you know, any common sense person would say, you know, that has to change. And I think most Americans also are, in fact, much more reluctant now after all the years of Bush and Obama in the Middle East and so on, in using military force mostly as the main thrust of American foreign policy. I should add to what Donna said that when the United States gives foreign aid to other countries, that money is usually spent in the United States. I mean, you know, we give military aid to a country so they can then buy American military equipment. We give food assistance to countries, and in some cases, it is simply money that goes to buying American surplus food commodities to be sent as food. Many professors at the University of Iowa, Northern Iowa, Iowa State, may be on contract with USAID or other U.S. government programs that are put into the category of foreign aid because they go there and help people with, you know, water projects and public administration development and so on. And so, yes, foreign aid is tiny, but on top of that, it's actually mostly spent on American services and products.
Asking our guests this hour, Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University and Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa, to size up the Rand Paul candidacy. Asking you as well, 1-866-780-9100. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook. You can leave a message, ask a question there, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Here's an email from Kelly in Iowa City. I haven't been a fan of Rand Paul with the Tea Party rhetoric in the last few years, but his stances now seem to mix the popular social stances of traditional Democrats and the frustration with lobbying, corporate influence, and government overreach that has been plaguing our political system for years. That email from Kelly in Iowa City. Joining us by phone, he dialed 1-866-780-9100. Jason in Cedar Falls. Jason, what's your view?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say, Professor Smith, nice to hear your voice again. I was in your class in 97.
Wow, terrific.
But learned a lot from you. Thanks.
Thank you.
But as an independent voter over the years, and I think from graduating from Iowa State, I've really had a – I really look at political views objectively or try to. And I'm very interested in Rand Paul, especially, you know, with the Democratic Party. I haven't seen the changes that I really wanted to see and the things addressed. I think he's tapping on a lot of things that are important to my demographic, which are 35 to 40-year-olds. A lot of positive response for Rand Paul, you know, especially with not only the and kind of the corporate issues, you know, lobbyists, et cetera, but also internationally. There's a difference between non-interventionist and isolationism. And I think his biggest obstacle is going to be the GOP, the traditional Republicans. And I'm just really excited because I think even regardless of where his campaign goes, these are the issues. He's bringing up key issues that need to be talked about politically, and it needs to be driven forward. So that's kind of my comment.
Okay.
Ben, can I ask Jason?
Yeah, Jason, we have just about a minute left. Quickly, Donna.
Jason, so you said you were an independent. Are you going to go to the Iowa Republican caucuses and caucus for Rand Paul? Are you that excited about him?
You know, I just sent in some information here locally, and I think I'm going to. I'm going to take the next step. Like I said, and, you know, to maybe lay myself out there, I voted democratically for the last, you know, decade or more. So, he's going to sway me probably if he stays on message.
Okay, Jason, thank you for that from Cedar Falls. We'll continue our conversation here on Politics Day. Rand Paul into the next half hour after a short break. We want to hear how you size up Rand Paul as a presidential candidate. Republican voters, is he your candidate? We've been hearing from independent, non-party voters as well. Do you see yourself giving your support to Rand Paul in the Iowa caucuses? In the general election, those Iowa caucuses, only 9 months away. We'll be back with more. Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University, Donna Hoffman of the University of Northern Iowa, lending us their expertise, back in just a few minutes. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University, professor of political science there, is with us this hour in our Ames studio, in our Cedar Falls studio. Donna Hoffman, associate professor at the University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls, lending us their view on recent political developments. And yesterday, Rand Paul, Kentucky senator, libertarian, declared his candidacy for 2016 as vying for the White House. This eye surgeon, we're asking you how you size up Rand Paul as a presidential candidate. 1-866-780-9100. It was just 8 years ago that another sitting senator was able to portray himself as a Washington outsider, an agent for change. That person, of course, now sitting in the Oval Office. And the refrain from that 2008 campaign, yes, we can. Tomorrow on this program, my guest is the man behind that successful 2008 campaign. David Axelrod will join me. He'll talk about his start in politics, his years with President Obama, and his take on the 2016 presidential race. David Axelrod tomorrow on this program. Let's continue talking a little bit about Rand Paul here. Facebook post from James. Not impressed, James says. He's just another politician using vague speech for voters to imprint upon. So is Rand Paul, you think, Donna, just jumping off the cynicism, the frustration, we see it in all kinds of polls, especially against Congress, that Americans feel towards the government in Washington. Or is he actually offering to deliver on things? For instance, his offer of a constitutional amendment to bring term limits.
Well, I think most of the things that he's offering are actually things that aren't actually going to happen because, for example, he, as if he were to be president, he's not actually involved in a constitutional amendment other than just maybe talking about it and selling it. But he plays no role in that. And many of the other things he wants to do would take Congress. This is you know, true for anybody who runs for president. There's very little they can do unilaterally by themselves. And so he is certainly tapping into kind of this cynicism that people have. But, you know, I want to go back to what we were talking about right before the break, mm-hmm. where Jason called in and he was an independent, a self-proclaimed independent. And, you know, he said he's kind of excited by Rand Paul. And I asked him, you know, would you actually go caucus for him? Mm-hmm. And that's the challenge for Rand Paul. This was the same challenge that Obama had, because Obama excited a lot of people who weren't used to caucusing. And caucusing is a different beast than just going to a poll and checking a ballot and going on your merry way for the day. And so not only does Rand Paul have to excite people, and he may excite people, as Stefan mentioned earlier, you know, kind of for general election purposes, but maybe not within the Republican caucuses in the state. So Rand Paul and his campaign have to excite people enough that they will actually get them to turn out to caucus. Now, his father had some success in doing this, and they were very organized and you know, even went off to the national convention, and we had more Republican national committee delegates from on the Republican side that voted for Rand Paul than for Mitt Romney, or for Ron Paul, I should say, than Mitt Romney. And so it's not an insurmountable challenge. It was a similar challenge that Obama had, but it is something that they really have to focus on in the state, because it's not enough to excite, you know, people in college who tend to have libertarian bents for a while anyway. You actually have to get them to go knock on doors and to appear at the caucuses.
Let's listen to Rand Paul on a social issue here. This is him. You mentioned this earlier, Stefan. He has some different issue positions on social issues. This is Rand Paul talking about the drug war. Okay.
Applied equally. And any law that disproportionately incarcerates people of color is repealed.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we didn't hear much of that clip, but anyway, Stefan, can you address that, Rand Paul, how he differs from the rest of the GOP on social issues?
Well, you know, the one thing that has gotten a lot of attention is his, I think, fairly relevant and accurate critique of the prison epidemic in this country. I mean, the United States has, I think, more prisoners per capita than any other country in the world, except maybe North Korea or someplace like that. I can't remember now. There are a couple of countries that are hideous that have larger numbers of people in jail or out on parole. I think one out of every 100 Americans is either in jail or on parole. And most of that is because of drug laws, and in many cases, small amounts of drugs. And that becomes an enormous burden on society, because the cost is high of imprisonment. The cost is incredibly high, because for the rest of the lifetime of that person with a criminal record, they have a hard time finding a job. And so, you know, I think that resonates a lot with people. But Republicans have been reluctant to be, quote, soft on crime. And I think what he's saying is that's not being soft on crime. That's just being smart in terms of how we manage the social behavior of people. Some of that behavior being, you know, just simply personal use of small amounts of drugs like marijuana. Mm-hmm. That's different.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about Rand Paul's appeal, various facets of it, but we all know this being our political system, money is involved. Big money can be involved. Donna Hoffman, does Rand Paul have it in him, have the supporters with the big money behind him?
That kind of remains to be seen. And again, you know, what his father excelled at was not getting the big money supporters. It was getting a lot of small money supporters. Mm-hmm. And so it remains kind of to be seen if the Paul campaign in its Rand incarnation will be able to tap into kind of the people who are giving to the unlimited amounts to super PACs and that kind of thing. But again, being active in getting small donors who can come back to the well, Obama did this as well, can be, you know, very useful. And it can also then show the big donors who might be reluctant to support you at this point because of some of your stances that you really can play and can be a serious contender. And so I think that's probably where they will start is working on those small donors.
Donna, I want to ask Stefan about this too as we close our conversation about Rand Paul. What are his chances in winning the nomination within the GOP in the coming from the libertarian wing, I guess, his challenge there, succinctly put, would be to broaden his base outside of his libertarian following to broaden it without alienating any of those who support him?
I think it's a big challenge. And, you know, we've already seen an ad go up. It's on in some markets in the state and in some of the other early caucus and primary states. That's criticizing Rand Paul for his stance in standing with Obama in terms of Iran. And so he's obvious, and that came from a group that at least one of the people involved in it was involved with Swift Boat Veterans for Truth back in the 2004 campaign. And so he's going to engender a lot of criticism from other people within the Republican field, and some of that will be backed up with super PAC money to run ads like this. And so he has a number of challenges in terms of combating that kind of negative campaign against him within the party, but also then in trying to get the people he wants to appeal to actually be excited and be active, give him money, turn out to caucus or to go to a primary.
This email from Neil: my thinking on the foreign policy that Rand Paul espouses is very similar to my opinion of his father's non-intervention foreign policy views. Both of them back simplistic answers to very complex world problems. Like it or not, the world looks to the U.S. for leadership in solving these problems, and to ignore them is to imperil the long-term safety and prosperity of the entire planet. Thanks for that email from Neil. How do you size up, Stefan Schmidt, to Rand Paul's chances of making this first hurdle to be one of the contenders for the nomination?
Yeah, I remember the conversation in 2008 when you asked, maybe it wasn't you, somebody asked me, what do you really think the chances are of a freshman senator from Illinois who is black
right.
getting doing well in the Iowa caucuses, first of all, and then, of course, I mean, ridiculous, getting the nomination and becoming a two-term president?
Mm-hmm.
It seemed too remote. We never know how the dynamics of these things work out. The Republicans have a huge field of contenders. I think some of them who may connect very well with the base in Iowa are going to rip that base apart, and they're each going to get, you know, 5% or 3% or whatever of the base. And that isn't going to help them very much because, you know, you need numbers to look good on caucus night, because the Republican caucus is a straw poll. Remember, it's a beauty contest. All you have to do is you know, have more votes in the 1,700 precincts in the state than anyone else, and you're declared the winner. And if Rand Paul can put together a package of very passionate supporters who are not going to support any of the others, and the other, I think yesterday we counted 13 Republicans, including Carly Fiorina and so on, if they tear apart the remaining base of the party, then Rand Paul could very well end up with the largest number of caucus votes. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. It reminds me, you are going to be teaching this fall. What is it? Is it a MOOC or a MOOC?
Yes, it's a MOOC. It's a massive open online course, and you can find it on the internet by just Googling Iowa Presidential Caucus's MOOC, M-O-O-C, and it'll pop up as the first to hit on Google. And it's free. Iteration starts in September. It is not a high-pressure course. People can come in and can go. They can snack. They can graze. They don't have to finish it. There is no compulsion like that. And if they behave themselves and participate enough, they get a nice certificate at the end.
Okay.
We've done a lot of digital interviews with really cool people, professors and also politicians and Governor Branstad and so on, asking them. I have done those interviews to talk about the caucuses. And I think there's a lot of fresh information in there that's going to be really interesting.
Okay, Stefan's a massive open online course that answers the questions, seeks to answer the questions. What are the caucuses and how do they work? I wanted to throw that in there.
Yeah.
In the remaining minutes, let's talk a little bit about the continuing debate over the framework deal with Iran over its nuclear program. Congress appears to be heading towards the passage of the Corker-Menendez bill, a bill that would temporarily suspend President Obama's authority to lift sanctions as part of the final agreement with Iran. It would then, in that case, hinge on congressional voting to approve or disapprove of the deal. And with Democratic help, it may pass the Senate with a veto-proof majority. Let's listen to President Obama speaking with NPR's Steve Inskeep about the Iran nuclear deal. He says it would limit Iran's nuclear program, leaving no room to evade inspections and the threat of new sanctions. Here's the president responding to Israel's suspicion of Iran.
I think it's important to recognize that there are a whole host of countries in the Middle East that don't yet recognize Israel. Israel has peace treaties with Egypt. It has peace treaties with Jordan. But there are other countries where there are obvious tensions between Israel and the Arab world. Some of those are just outgrowths of anti-Semitic sentiment inside the Arab world. Some of those are related to the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians and the lack of resolution there. The most important thing for Israelis is to know that they can defend themselves and that they have America, the world's most powerful country, there to protect them alongside their military and their intelligence operations.
Donna Hoffman, as you see this debate going on, President Obama selling it not only to Congress, trying to, but selling it to the American people, what are your observations?
Well, I mean, I think right now Senator Corker is one of the White House's favorite Republicans in the Senate, in the sense that they really want to have discussions with him in trying to work with the bill that's pending, because it does look like it could pass potentially, as you mentioned, with veto-proof majorities. And Corker is seen as being one of the Republicans that is very moderate. He was one of the seven Republicans that did not sign Senator Cotton's letter to the Iranian regime earlier in the year, and he's behind this bill, and so they really do want to try to work with him, especially on the timing of it, and in trying to hold off on that and what's acceptable and what's not acceptable to the parties involved, because the White House would really like to keep Congress out of the negotiations at this point, because the framework has been set, or the blueprint, kind of, if you will, but it hasn't been finalized, and that won't happen until June. And so they really want to try to keep Congress out of that mix, because were Congress to limit the president's authority here, they really think that that could endanger the entire negotiations.
Mm-hmm. Republicans wanting to assert a congressional role in either granting or restricting authority to lift those sanctions. Stefan, is there any way to reconcile the differences? You see the positions